gentlemen, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of New Zealand. It's Auckland, the island, chained nation of New Zealand, the sunny, slave, South Pacific island nation. Isn't it beautiful this time of year? It's nice and summery, and there's a plague of flies and mosquitoes and zombies called the general public. My very special guest today is a traveller, an American traveller, which is actually quite rare, considering, what was it, like 70% of Americans don't even have passports. His name is Jeff Wefferson, and he's now travelling around the Southern Hemisphere. Jeff, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Kia ora, and aroha nui from Aotearoa.
Yes, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been a human being for most of this lifetime. Like you said, I'm originally from North Carolina, grew up there. My educational background is in interdisciplinary science, although I've only worked for myself and Mother Nature. Traveled by hitchhiking primarily in 47 states in Canada all through the 1980s and 1990s. And the year 2000, I was inspired to come to the Southern Hemisphere and have basically been traveling around down under ever since, with a few exceptions back into the Northern Hemisphere. But it's very much of a spiritual journey and an endeavor of creativity. But I wanted to thank you for having me on the show, and I'd also like to thank John Eisen of Uncensored Magazine and Rose Page of The Contrail for putting us in touch, and congratulate them on the good work that they're doing, and yourself. You remind me of, there's a little Alex Jones in there.
Well, that's not the first time somebody's said that, and it's quite a fracking big mantle to fill, but, you know, I'm 6 foot four. I can fill any mantle.
Right.
So I joke.
How did you come to become a media activist?
I think it was probably because the thing that actually really spurred me on actually was the person that you just mentioned. And I had a job selling business landlines and toll calls for a major telecommunications company. And my boss was very abusive, psychotic, crazy sort of thing. And as a result, I started getting really depressed when I go to work. I actually was going to work really wasted, to tell you the truth, and because I couldn't deal with it anymore. And I had previously, in the last month of my work, done a really, really hardcore good month of sales. So I got, during a promotional period, $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers. And what? I was like, That was the impetus that I had. I can suddenly stop working, live off buying food at the mall, buy a computer with those vouchers, buy a camera with those vouchers, and go out and go to protests and try to get all of those people that, basically never get into the media, some media coverage. And it just basically, it's a... grown ever since then. It's I think basically the biggest motivators for people in this movement is people.
Absolutely, and I think that there is indeed some humanity left in people.
There's tons left. I mean, and if there wasn't, would I be doing what I'm doing? Could I be doing what I'm doing? I doubt it very much. You know, I've always said, Jeff, that all of the best things in my life have been given to me. You know, this radio show was given to me by Danny Romero of American Freedom Radio. My current camera that I'm using was given to me by one of the listeners when I made a plea out and said that I needed a new camera. The computer that I'm using right now to do this radio show was donated by a listener who had never heard of me before and only listened to a quarter of one show with Stuart Swerdlow before deciding to buy me a $4,000 computer.
Old proverb, seek and you shall find. I think if we put out to the universe what our real needs are, the universe, being a very benevolent entity, will try to help us in any possible way. But I think you're hinting at something that I see as a major, something that's holding us back as humanity, is we're sort of locked into this, I'll call it a religious belief system, because I don't think it's an invalid comparison to say that capitalism is in fact a religion. It's not like a religion, it is a religion. It has all the salient qualities of any organized religious belief system, but we don't think of it as one, so that makes it even more dangerous. But we're locked into this thing that you can't give anything away. How would that benefit you? You've got to sell stuff, and your relationships have to be based on getting things and getting money from other people in an organized way, businesses and stuff like that. If we were somehow able to just sort of release that belief system even shortly and realize that we are free to give and to share at any level, if we just decide to, that would, imagine how much energy would be released and how much more we'd be able to accomplish in terms of our, what we're, you know, people like yourself, for example, but you know, you just gave us an example of people giving, you know, to help somebody with a cause that they believe in. So it's there, but if we could access a lot more of that, it would be good.
Well, it's not like I didn't earn it, you know. It took me a good... I think I'm actually starting just now. In fact, I realized this as recently as yesterday, that it's been nearly 4 years now since starting my campaign for the people against the New World Order and being the media entity that New Zealand now needs. And it's taken this long before I'm starting to get enough income from it in donations, subscriptions, purchases off the website that I'm actually now capable of surviving to any degree. And I hope that the longer I do it, the more income I'll be able to have. So that way I don't have to worry about how my bills are getting paid. I just have to worry about the odd occasion when a black uniform thug comes into my house and exterminates me.
Well, you wouldn't have to worry about that but once.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not worried about it at all.
You don't seem like someone that's on a... Go ahead.
Well, it's coming down to, like, I want to work all day, every day. You know, yesterday, for example, got up at 8 a.m., jumped on my computer before even having breakfast, was splashing stuff all over Facebook and posting new blogs, editing videos, processing them, uploading them. And I got 2 hour-and-a-half videos done yesterday of archives of the show and a lot of other stuff done. Just did an interview with Max Eigen. And so I started at 8 a.m. and wound up getting to sleep at about maybe 1:30. And then this morning had to get up at, like, just magically woke up 10 minutes before my interview with Max Eigen that I did this morning. And I also managed to squeeze in a phone call. Somebody emailed me through the website. He may even be listening now, who was wanting to do a big court case against the US military and undermine them and that kind of thing. And he sounded a little bit kind of freaked out to me. You know, he's talking about these helicopters over his house and all of this other kind of stuff. And it felt to me like he was a very new truther and he didn't know precisely how to conduct himself. Because when that's your focus, when the focus is the helicopters over my house and people surveilling me and all of that kind of stuff, it's got you stuck in that little fear paradigm, and it's not a good thing. It's, you know, it's like, this is the fear paradigm. It's two hands over your eyes, and it's only once you let go of that fear that you can suddenly go, oh, hey, there's stuff everywhere that's really good and wonderful and beautiful and full of light, and it's fantastic and fabulous, and there's many, many good people that I can meet on a day-to-day basis, networking and actually caring. Right?
You know,
and I would never see that if I was still so deathly afraid of my own shadow.
I discovered a new mental disorder for the New World Order. It's called aphobophobia. It's the fear of having nothing to be afraid of. It's just a joke, but I was just going to say, you certainly don't seem like somebody that's operating on the fear wavelength. I think so much of this legislation they passed, for example, doesn't matter if they ever enforce it, because a lot of people, when they read about the NDAA and they can detain you and just all this bullshit, it's really meant to to act on people's unconscious mind to keep them thinking in their little box.
Well, and bear in mind, we have a little box on this show. It's called the FCC, and we're not allowed to say that word. We need to use the word BS instead. There's a lot of words that you can't say. You can say scumbaggery. You can say Shiite Muslim, but I had a joke yesterday, Jeff. What do you call somebody who's sympathetic towards SOPA?
A soap opera fan?
No, you call them so pathetic.
Ah, but that's good. That's good. We're the creative engineering of English is a very powerful thing that we can do, especially along the lines of humor. Because if you think about the way we use language, we're using language right now and a specific language called English. And these languages, each one has its own sort of characteristics for the kind of reality that you tend to operate in when you speak this language. And being conscious of this and having the using your own creativity to come up with new words that are perfectly good, that make sense, like so pathetic, that's actually very brilliant. And I also want to compliment you on your vitality and energy, because it's really something cool. That's when I first got in touch with you, I said, like, dude, we need more people like you that really care. You've got the energy, and you know what's going on, and you're doing something good. It's cool.
Well, can I share something with you? My energy is actually artificial. I dose myself up like a fiend on coffee before I do the show every day, and when that runs out, there's a bit of a crash sort of thing, and I kind of sit here like a zombie, sort of doing the menial tasks, you know, editing and that sort of thing. But I find that when you're on radio, coffee is an absolute essential to life.
We drink very high quality certified organic coffee, and I highly recommend that you do if you don't already, because regular non-organic coffee has an enormous amount of pesticides and weird chemicals and stuff in there, and it shoots straight into your what you're really getting is an adrenaline boost when you drink coffee. So if you switch to pure organic, you'll be doing your system a favor.
And just like many other people, I can't afford it. You know, I'm still. It's like, look at it like this: we can afford organic milk at this point, right? Organic coffee is a one step. In fact, I think the milk is the only organic stuff that we do, because when I drink the homogenized, pasteurized stuff, I have a really, really bad reaction to it. Like, I've got more phlegm than Fukushima combined with Mount St. Helens. It's quite horrific. It's kind of by default that we have to fork out the extra for the organic milk, and we can't really afford anything else, you know, hand to mouth every day. It's a hard life trying to prevent yourself from being poisoned. Like, look at this. Here's a cup of coffee, okay? It's a thermos, which is wrapped in plastic that has BPA containing chemicals in it. Inside it is a stainless steel. Goodness knows what kind of chemicals and stuff get leached off of stainless steel. Inside it is sugar that's really bad for you and gives you diabetes. And then there's the coffee with all the pesticides in it and organic milk. So it's
Waters.
Like it's like a poison within a poison within a poison within a poison cup that you drink.
It's a miracle.
That's like that with everything.
What percent of the population has heavy metal or metal poisoning happening in their brain?
Probably say 100%.
Or more. I was also going to add that scientists have just discovered that by harnessing photons in the way that you'd harness, in the way that plants harness light to grow your broccoli, they figured out a way that you can harness photons that are going faster than light, so that you can now get as many as 36 hours out of every day. Okay. To increase your amount of time for doing stuff by 50%.
That'd be interesting. How exactly do you do that? I mean, I heard Santos Banachi talking about this, and there's also some Indian shaman. It's called sun gazing. For the first 30 minutes of the day and the last 30 minutes of the day, if you stare directly into the sun, you absorb photons through your eyes. But the problem is you can't just go straight from never looking into the sun to looking into it for a full half hour. You'll go blind. It's like you do it for like 10 seconds the first day, and then 11 seconds the second day, and then then 12 seconds the next day, until you actually build yourself up to that point. And then allegedly, not only do you need far less sleep, but you don't even need no food.
Well, what this is, it's actually it's a form of yoga that's existed in India for a long time. And there was a guy whose name I could find it because he was being studied by NASA. What this is something you have, as he says, you have to do it for 2 or 3 years. And you start off by, it has to do with letting the photons directly into your brain, and it does something with your pineal gland. But you, like you said, you gaze at the sun for brief periods of time at sunrise and sunset every day, and you gradually increase this. And you also do some kind of physical yoga. It has to do with activating something by, you're supposed to walk barefoot on an uneven ground because there's some kind of nerve endings at the bottom of your feet that are related to all this stuff.
We'll have to talk about more of this after the break. My very special guest, the traveler, is Jeff Wafferson. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Everybody for holding on over the break there. We've been having some very interesting talks indeed, and even a little bit of singing on my part, of course. And one thing that Jeff asked me to do, and we often do this on the show, is to tell you the root meanings of things. And he wants to tell us the root meaning of the word conspiracy. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I took 2 years of Latin in high school, which I took it very seriously. And so now I'm able to actually come up with very believable sounding scientific words. But it's very interesting. The word conspiracy comes from the Latin word conspirare, which means to breathe together. So conspiracy literally means people who breathe together, because I think that the implication was that people would, they kind of like whisper in each other's ear, you know, behind the closed doors and stuff like that. But literally taken, it means anybody. So all aerobic life forms, anybody that breathes oxygen, is a co-conspirator in the web of life. So we're all co-conspirators. Animals, all larger animals, all human beings, we're all co-conspirators in this vast plot that we call reality here on planet Earth. But this ties me into something that I mentioned to you in my first email, that I think it's important to identify different factions and groups and organizations and people who, even in their own words, they tell us what they're doing. You know, that the people with the depopulation agenda, they say, we're going to take out these countries in this order because it's part of this plan that was activated by our new Pearl Harbor that we called for in a book 10 years ago. And, you know, if people take the time to look, you can see all these things in their own words. They don't really hide it. But I think that it's important to not always point the finger at somebody else, even though we know that there are organizations like, you know, I've been doing some activism about the, you know, what the real global threats are, for example, to the whales and dolphins. And sad to say, it's as much as what the Japanese whalers and fishermen are doing, that's very barbaric, but it's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is, like, for example, the U.S. Navy and its activities, or the side effects from petroleum exploration. So these are much bigger things. But anyway, it's important to not always point the finger at somebody else, but to pull back and look at the bigger picture and realize that really all of us human beings are all part of the picture. We're all really 6.7 billion variations on the theme of humanity. So if you look at it that way, I tend to try to look at it like human Homo sapiens. To me, that's the biggest oxymoron of all time. Homo sapiens. It means man the wise. That's what we named ourselves. Seriously, and so that's kind of the root of our problem. We think that we're the pinnacle of intelligence on the planet, because intelligence is a human concept that we created using human language and all this stuff. So our only measure of intelligence is through our own eyes. But we have to look at ourselves as only one species of life on this planet, and we're sort of collectively insane compared to. I look at it like I think that the metaphor for our brain being a computer is a little crude because it's actually our brains that created computers. But if you look at I call it our mental operating system. It's like a basic worldview that's shared by a lot of people. It's actually an anthropological concept, the study of worldviews and stuff like that. But the psychological warfare people, especially in Nazi Germany, and then it really began with the advertising community before that, they had a form of thing called the Weltanschauungskrieg, which means worldview warfare, where they actually use mass media techniques to actually conduct a form of psychological warfare on people's worldview, which means influencing your most fundamental beliefs about what is true. So if we keep in mind that we're constantly all being exposed to psychological worldview warfare, then the most central thing we can do is constantly question the most fundamental beliefs that we believe are true and that we act on. We have to constantly question these and then also realize that from the perspective of the Earth, we're just one species. We're not the only one who matters here. But yet, the effects of our industrial civilization are having extremely negative effects for just about everything else that's alive on this planet. And what I'm trying to do in these past few sentences is to create a new sort of frame of reference that if you're coming from here, it helps you to get a firmer foundation on how to reevaluate your basic beliefs and stuff. If you realize that some of our most fundamental assumptions aren't really true, that they've been fed to us and ingrained and conditioned in us, it's like people as a whole have had a form of mental genetics foisted on us all through the 20th century by the powers that be, using psychological warfare techniques, mass media, the subverting of the process of education. And again, these processes have been written about by the directors of private foundations and stuff. Yeah, I'm sure you sort of know what I'm talking about, but if we look at humans are just one species of life on this planet. We, in our mind, basically, the basic beliefs that we act on demonstrate that we think that we're the only life form that really matters, and that everything else is sort of, we might think the whales are pretty animals to look at, but the bottom line is that when it comes down to it, but anything, it's okay for stuff to be killed if it's in the way of our national security or resources that we need or something like that.
Well, it feels like justification, right? That's all that people need in order to want to do something. I need justification for it. Some people, they set the bar pretty high for justification. Like, for example, somebody would have to be killing me or trying to kill me in order for me to justify defending myself with deadly force. Okay, somebody jumps in my house with a giant machete. They're about to kill me, rape my wife, put my children in manacles and take them off to be sex slaves for some employee of DynCorp or something like that. Okay, justification's instantly there. Pull out the shotgun, bang, stop all that bad stuff from happening. What the government does is they say, well, nobody's trying to hurt us, nobody's trying to do anything, so that justifies us killing and hurting everybody.
It's a form of the people take those kind of they take that way of thinking, they take it seriously. Whereas from a point of view of actually being sane, it's insane. It's hard to get your head around the mentality of some of these bureaucratic organizations.
Well, see, there's a simple reason for that. Jeff, you're a sane and decent and moralistic person. For you to understand the actions and motives of an insane, immoral person, you'd have to become what?
Just like that.
Exactly. You're not. So, ergo, it's impossible for you to understand. And more to the point, you wouldn't actually want to understand fully because you'd lose everything that you are in the process.
I think if you just watch a few movies on TV or listen to the news, that gives you about as much of a glimpse as you really need into that mentality.
It's we live in an insane world, and of course, we're the ones who realize this. And so naturally, everybody calls us nuts. You know, it's just the same thing. It's a door that swings both ways, isn't it, Jeff?
At least both ways, and maybe into other dimensions as well.
Yeah. The door swings into other dimensions.
Yes. Another thing I wanted to talk about is the power of our creativity. Like, when you talk about creativity, a lot of people think of, you know, like artists and musicians and stuff like that. But when you really think about it, creativity is literally the process of creating at any level of our conscious or unconscious activity. So if you analyze your day, if you go back and think of every little decision that you've made, whether you are aware of it or not, since you woke up this morning, there would have been thousands of decision-making junctures that you've done already today. You decided which way to fold your sheet when you got up. You decided which side of bed to get out on. You decided which foot to put down first, what you were going to do. And if you look at this decision-making process, if you add these up, the summation of these over even one day would probably be in the hundreds of thousands or millions. And each of these decisions is literally the way that we are creating who we are as people throughout our whole life. And to be conscious of this process and to be conscious of how you're using your creativity second by second, hour by hour, it's a very important process because it's enormously powerful. Our creativity is sort of like the divinity. It's a spark of divinity in each person is our creativity, because the ability to bring forth something from nothing. That's literally what it means. So, but we do that, even if it's in the domain of our mind. But we've got mind over matter. You go like, hey, I'm going to move my finger, and then you do it. So that's your mind-controlled matter. We've got that ability. It's not an abstract thing. So the way we use our creativity is very, very powerful, much more powerful than we give ourselves credit for. The powers that be have known this for a long time. So that's what they do. The trick is to trick our creativity into creating a false reality based on bogus information. This is what organized religion has always been about. If you feed bullshit information into a computer, you're going to get an answer that the computer might think is true.
Again, FCC regulations, Jeff, you've got to watch your language, eh? Jeff, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, continue.
You mean the BS?
Yeah.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
But anyway, but you understand what I'm talking about. If you feed in bogus information, then the reality that comes out is going to be equally inappropriate. So for us
that's like the whole global warming computer models and everything. They feed junk information into a computer, and they get out junk conclusions, and they use those junk conclusions to make junk legislation, and that junk legislation makes life junk, doesn't it? You know? It really, and in that case, it really is mind over matter, because they've lost their mind, and as a result, they lose an appreciation for everything that matters. They lose appreciation for everything that matters. And in that sense, you know, when we, you know, people like you and I, Jeff, talk about mind over matter, that's about overcoming the reality that we see by using our creativity and our minds to literally solve those problems. How the elite view mind over matter is they don't mind and we don't matter.
Well, there you go. But back to the creativity and awareness thing, a central issue that I'm sort of concerned with is trying to, like, people go, so many people, they go like, well, but even if we're aware of all this stuff, what can we actually do about it? How can we possibly fight against the biggest military in the world with all the unlimited money and legions of people just obeying them all the time? And I go, to me, the most powerful thing that anyone can do begins with your own life. You use your own creativity to analyze yourself, which this is the sort of the core foundation of any real spiritual path, regardless of what discipline it might be. It begins with understanding yourself, looking at yourself, examining your own creative process, and what you want to do. As I see it, the most powerful thing anybody can do is to actually use or apply the highest knowledge that you already know. And like a lot of people, if you go like, well, so when it comes to talking, everybody goes like, well, yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. But I go like, well, so, but are you actually living this? And they go, well, no, it's a little inconvenient. And you go like, well, you know, but so do you want to come to the end of your life? And after you've had several decades of opportunity, and the best thing you can say is that you watched a lot of TV. I don't think that's why we're really here, to consume other people's fiction. So if using your creativity can become fun, it won't be an inconvenience or a chore. It'll be a joy to exercise this brilliant power that we all have. But what it comes down to me is, we can't fight against the military directly. We can't fight against the millionaire bankers directly. What we can do is we can stop consuming their fiction, and we can simplify our lives down to, like, in the physical domain, we can simplify our physical existence down to what we really need, but get rid of all the stuff that we don't need that's actually bad for us health-wise and stuff. And I could provide specific examples, but if you create a state of coherence, which is like a term from physics and optics, it has, coherence is the opposite of dissonance. Coherence means that all your vibrations mesh together and they work together like a laser. A laser is what they call coherent light. It's really focused and powerful.
Well, hold on. We'll have to get back into the lasers and coherent light. And I thought that the opposite of coherence was incoherence, but maybe that's just me. We'll be right back after the break with my very special guest, Jeff Wefferson, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Back in a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening.
There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Sad joke. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about just a little bit of history repeating. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that realizes that there's nothing new under the sun. My very special guest today is Jeff Wefferson. Bit of a traveler, is he? Jeff, welcome back. And I was explaining to you over the break that I've started up a new project. Just came up with it yesterday off the top of my head, and before I knew it, it was up and away. It's called Mr. News Counterspin. Now, the idea is every day you get a whole group of headlines in from mainstream media, you know, so let's say TVNZ and the New Zealand Herald, two of probably the biggest mainstream media establishments in this country. What you do is you take all the headlines, you pop them in the in the Skype chat group that has 30 plus activists, researchers, reporters, and people in this country who know what the frack they're talking about, basically. And if they see a headline that they know something about, if they can debunk it or whatever, they just put their hands up, and then we record a quick 5 minute something with them. And so by the end of the day, we've got each and every major headline in the mainstream media of that day debunked and uploaded to YouTube on a daily basis, called Mr. News Counterspin. And I'll be beginning that today after the show. So, and people were saying, you know, Vinny, this is a great idea, you know, brilliant, sweet ass. And it really is, because A1, there's no obligation, it's all volunteer. And it's so easy to talk for only a minute or two, isn't it? Especially if you've got years and years of research backing up your opinions. If anything, it's difficult to stop speaking. And all these people are incredibly busy, and they don't have the time to devote like an hour a day or anything like that. And so what I do is I just go in there, record them, and do all the grunt work and get it up and going, you know? And that's what I do in my life, Jeff. I just facilitate. Somebody comes to me with a problem or something they need or want or anything like that, I try and do it for them. Like the people who live upstairs, for example, they were having problems with their internet just like I was last week. So what I did is I ran an internet cable from my computer all the way upstairs through the window, that kind of thing, so they could have internet and for the 5 or 6 days that they were waiting for theirs to be connected. You know, that's how I am. If I can help you, I will. If I can't, I definitely won't. Jeff,
welcome,
you there?
My son. Welcome to the machine. That was Pink Floyd.
Right. Haven't heard that song before.
Really? It's from Wish You Were Here. Welcome to the Machine. You never heard that?
I didn't hear the... I've heard the song Wish You Were Here. In fact, I made a music video to it some time ago. I don't recall the words Welcome to the Machine at all.
That's
but then
song,
again...
That's what the song is called.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I thought... was Wish You Were Here an album or a song?
Yeah, both.
Ah, of course. I've heard the song, but not the album.
it's pretty good. But back to, so as you said, of course, incoherence would be the opposite of coherence.
Yeah.
Are you hearing me all right? Your audio?
Yeah. I can hear you just fine.
Okay, yours is kind of breaking up on this end. The internet connection's not very good. Anyway, but the point I was trying to make before is that our creativity is extremely powerful, but we have to, it's like your diet. I think that the food that we take into our body is the single biggest influence on our health. And the same with your mind. You need to ingest high quality information from sources who actually care about you, rather than the sort of information fast food that you get from mainstream media and television. So if people sort of looked at the way the media that they consume and that forms the basis of a lot of their personal reality, if you question that, pay as much attention to that as you do the food that you put in your body, then I think that's a good step towards having a more coherent personal worldview, a worldview that actually makes sense when you're living in today's world, rather than running around in Facebook land or something like that. But another point I try to make when people go like, well, we can't really fight against the military, what do we do? And I go like, well, you can stop being a soldier in World War III yourself through daily activities that most people don't even question. But when you look at the sum total of it per day, say like just people in America, for example, how many people drive a car every day but to go someplace that they either didn't really need to go or that they didn't have to drive a car to get there? Light years are driven wastefully around the world with enormous cost to the ecology, human and non-human health, the resources that we consume, the lives that are lost and stuff like that. So in other words, there's a few basic things that people in Western cultures do every day that constitute acts of warfare against nature. It's big. I mean, that if you add up the sum total of all the and I'm just talking about unnecessary driving. And sure, there's a gray area on what someone thinks is necessary and what's not necessary. But how many times, like in Australia, we travel in Australia a lot. There you see probably 8 out of 10 vehicles seems to be a giant, oversized, four-wheel drive SUV getting probably 5 kilometers to the liter with one person in it, probably driving several hundred kilometers down the road. Where's the sense in that? You know, and so no environmental organization or politician is going to have a platform of conservation, which is really the only intelligent solution to the whole thing, but no one advocates conservation because no one can make money on not consuming something. This is where we can fight the battle at the level of the individual by lowering your own personal consumption of stuff that you can do without. You don't have to do without it, but just use less. Drive less, eat less meat. There's probably about 8 really solid reasons to reduce or eliminate meat and basically all animal products from your diet. Mobile phones, that's a form of personal technology that if you actually research into it, it was designed to as a way to get people to hold a microwave oven next to their brain. That seems to be the real agenda behind it. Pharmaceutical drugs is another thing that you can essentially really cut down on because it's basically a weapon system. The building of new giant houses. This is at the level of individual people. How many people live in a house that's about 20 times bigger than what you really need? You're catching my point with all this. It's these decisions that we make every day without thinking about it. And if you multiply that times how many people around the world are making these same decisions, and you look at how, for example, how the whole modern industrial society is exploding in China and all of your third world countries and stuff like that, it's going to reach a point where, I mean, the Earth is already in extreme anguish because of human activity, but we're crossing some thresholds where, like I said before, we're only one species of life, and the Earth does not require human presence to be healthy, but humans do require the Earth. There's an asymmetry in the relationship there. I'll hand it back over to you now.
Well, I find that it's kind of like, all you got to do is just make whatever is the opposite, and it'll go back to how it should be. Like, for example, the pyramid of the Illuminati, okay? It curves upwards, okay? And it gets narrow at the top. That's where all the power is concentrated. You flip that pyramid on its head, boom, power is concentrated at the bottom. And as it goes up and up and up, it gets wider and wider and wider. And that's what happens. Because I feel that ultimately what's happened is that people have bought into a lie about everything, right? Everything's a lie. Everything's a lie. It's real hard to substantiate everything being a lie because you'd have to prove each and every single individual thing to be a lie. But if you've been studying it for quite some time, that's not actually that difficult. It's a self-evident truth, okay? Everything is a lie. Everything is just basically topsy-turvy, upside down, flipped on its head, doesn't make any sense of any kind, way, shape, or form, or persuasion. Does it? So if you make everything the opposite of what it currently is, it'll actually be what it should have been the whole time. And thank you very much, Jeff, for coming on this show with me today. I'm glad to have had you on, and you have yourself a fabulous day, my friend.
Can I share one little word with you?
Go for your life. Yes,
it's the word, it's a prefix. I think it's either Greek or Latin. It's enantio. Enanto, enantio. It means the opposite of something.
All right. I am the enantio of tyranny and scumbaggery.
You are.
Thank you very much.
Is Clint Eastwood related to you?
No, but Lucy Lawless is my first cousin. There you go. That's my claim to fame. Even though she'll never help me gain fame for myself, I got to do it on my own. And I think I'll probably do it.
Yeah. Good work. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Next hour coming up soon. Gentlemen, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose that sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And you know what, the people who really don't have a sense of humour? Psychos, you know? They don't know how to laugh with anybody. They only know how to laugh at everybody. Now, the phone lines are now open. We don't take callers on the show very, very often, but when we do, man, we get some really good ones all the time. Every single time a caller has come in, it's been really, really nice, with the exception of one who shall remain nameless. The call-in number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. That's the number to call in. Now, being a conspiracy theorist, I wanted to talk about this for a little bit because it's like any other job. You have an employer. When you're a conspiracy theorist, on the other hand, your employer is not one person, it is not a corporation, it is humanity, it is all people. They are your employers. Okay, you're a slave to humanity. Or at least this is how I feel about it. I feel that basically I can choose to either be a slave to the New World Order, who actually wants to enslave me, or I can be a slave to humanity, who wants me to be free. And that's basically how I kind of justify it and juxtapose it to myself, sort of thing. You know, I'm not sure whether or not that's the truth. In fact, I don't know 100% whether anything's the truth, you know, to a degree, you know, because somebody could just present some evidence that I wasn't previously aware of and shatter my entire worldview, like a million specks of glass against a wall after an angry wife threw it at your head. and as a result, people find it difficult to find their feet in the truth movement. And I feel it's not so much about finding your feet, it's about more, shall we say, finding your niche. Okay, everybody's got skill, everybody's got talent, and everybody knows, I wouldn't say everybody knows, but a lot of people know what's going on. Now, secondary to finding out what's going on, and it's a very good idea to inform yourself, obviously, you know, there's many, many websites, documentaries, articles, etc. out there. That will wake you up substantially to all these various eclectic elements of the New World Order control grid and system. Once you find out which of those is your particular interest, that's when you can make a difference there. That's when you can throw your weight in. That's when you can find your strength, power, and purpose. The reason why so many people go through so many jobs is because that job doesn't agree with them. It never did. And that's the reason why they don't like being there. But they feel that they have to, because if they don't have a job, people will call them lazy and tell them to get a job, right? You know? In fact, somebody told me that the other day. I was cruising over David D's page. He's got a great new picture. It's Bill Gates with a big skull and crossbones vaccine with three very scared-looking African children behind him, and another couple of African children running away from guys in black uniforms behind them. And I put it onto my Facebook wall as, what was it called? Give me a second. Eugenics. Force sterilizing you at gunpoint for your own good. Okay? And that's basically what it is, you know? And this guy comes up and he says, oh, what? Are you completely retarded? And this, and here's the irony. This guy actually knows that Bill Gates' father was on the board of Planned Parenthood. He knows that Planned Parenthood used to be called the American Eugenics Society, okay? And then he still asked me to present evidence of this to stuff that he already knows to be true and has already seen the evidence. And he has the audacity to call me retarded. Oh, you gotta love the Facebook's block function. It's like block gone. All the peace, the tranquility, the serenity of it, eh? And this is the point when you're dealing with things in the truth movement. Don't put up with people who are douchebags, for frack's sake. You're far more valuable and important and a kind, decent, loving, moralistic person to have to put up with that crap. I mean, what have you done something bad in your life and you're trying to force yourself to pay penance by spending 3 hours arguing with these people who are so obviously not worth your fracking time? What did you don't deserve that kind of suffering. I don't deserve that kind of suffering. And conveniently, these people aren't paying me a salary, so I don't have to put up with them, okay? It's the only time I ever put up with anybody that I don't want to is when they're giving me money so I can survive, you know? And that's the same with everybody. You're doing a job that you really hate and you're putting up with all your boss's crap because you need to do it to survive, aren't you? That's how society works. Somebody ain't paying you. Somebody ain't helping you to survive. Somebody's just throwing abuse at you, acting like some description of douchebag. Block! Gone. Okay? Those kind of people are not worth your time. Cannot say that enough. Because they'll stop you from meeting other people who are. Okay? You'll be spending your time arguing with somebody for 4 hours on Facebook. And during that time, you could have met 3, 4, 5 other people who you do have some agreements with, who you could have a potential friendship with, who you could do some potential collaborations with on their radio programs or anything like that. You could do all that, but you're stuck instead arguing with somebody who doesn't get you, ain't gonna get you, and wasting your fracking time. And as far as I'm concerned, time is the only thing that you've got to spend in the truth movement, because ultimately nobody's going to give you an hourly salary. To a lesser or greater degree. There's very few people in the truth movement that can derive any income to support themselves off of their activities, okay? And if they do want to, it takes years and years and years of living hand to mouth before you even start to see any kind of return for all the hard work and effort that you put in. So anybody who's trying to do this movement for the money is wasting their time again. It's all about doing things for other people. That's the thing. Do it for others. Don't do it for yourself. Okay. I feel that I'm a shameless self-promoting person, right? So I've decided that my niche is to shamelessly promote other people in the truth movement. Any guests that you have on the show, you'll notice I'm quite the shameless promoter. You know, I make sure that they give out their websites and ask them to explain themselves, how they woke up to the truth movement, etc. Because these are the things that everybody can relate to. Waking up, and once you wake up, you got to go to work, don't you? I wake up every morning and I go to work against the New World Order. I'm not, and I work for the people. It's what you got to do. It's what a politician's job is supposed to be, is to work for the people, right? Wrong. The politician's job is to make the people think he's working for them when the reality is he's working against them. And in fact, he's working against them very hard. He gets up in the morning rubbing his hands with fracking glee. Just can't wait to tell the people another lie. Can't wait to allow another foreign corporation to come into the country and destroy the industry and pump people full of toxic chemicals downstream. Can't wait to talk to the media again, to brainwash everybody, to make sure that they will never wake up, never comprehend, never understand, and never care about what the truth really is. That's their job. And they get paid a substantial amount of money for that. You get up in the morning and you want to tell the truth. You want to help people to be self-sufficient. You want to help them to be loving. You want to help them to be caring. You want to help them to advance themselves. You want to help them to tell them how to solve their own problems so they don't need you anymore. You will have a very hard time finding people who are willing to pay for that. Okay? You have to do it for them. And if they can afford it, if they can support you, they will, because of the manner in which you do it. And this is the majority, I feel, in the truth movement. There are occasionally those who have a tendency towards scumbaggery, egotism, and sabotage other people, you know. Do naughty, nasty things behind the scenes, spread rumors, disrupt their day-to-day anti-New World Order operations on their radio shows or their websites or things like that. And you hear stories about this all the time, and you pray that it doesn't happen to you, but eventually it will, you know, especially if you're doing something right. If you're doing the right thing, somebody's going to have a problem with you, guaranteed. If you're doing the wrong thing, hey, you'll be protected by other people who are doing the wrong thing, who need you to be above water and appear squeaky clean. Otherwise, you'll bring them down too. And the elite are very interdependent on each other, much like the truth movement is. I would not be here without the kind, good graces of AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And I am, shall we say, acting under the assumption, the pure assumption, that everything I know to be true is in fact wrong, and I'm just trying to, you know, learn and live as we go along. It's actually really quite fun. When you look at the New World Order and you look at their stupidity, okay, they're trying to destroy the world. Now, when I say stupidity, I don't mean they're absolutely dumb, right? I'm talking about if they were a moralistic intelligence, if they were a divine intelligence or something like that, you would assume that it's stupidity. But it's malevolent intelligence that we're dealing with, which I feel kind of falls under the same category. Because ultimately, when you devote yourself to evil, and I'm talking about real evil here, not in some kind of fanciful fairyland or whatever like that. Killing babies and drinking their blood is evil. I don't care what your religion is, what your belief structure is, that's evil. Some people don't think that evil exists. They think that the corporations are just a little bit greedy. And that's why they collapse your economy. That's why they got 40 million people on food stamps in the United States. That's why vaccine schedules get you 52 vaccines stuck into your arm before the age of 18 months. That's why autism is now skyrocketing all over the world. That's why lithium depleted uranium and fluoride is put in the water. That's why Coca-Cola puts sodium into the Coke. You know, that's why Coca-Cola is a level 6 biotoxin when they bring the syrup off of the ships in hazmat suits, ship them by hazmat trucks to water it down and to bottle it into BPA containing plastics that make you into a girly girl. And if you are already a girly girl, you're going to be even girlier, get your period a heck of a lot earlier, and you're also going to develop breast cancer later in life. And if you're really upset about how you smell, you're going to put yourself into a crop dusting cloud of deodorants that give you breast cancer as well. And if you were stinky and you had flies hanging around you, you'd spray them with fly spray, which causes breast cancer too. Do you think this is all an accident? Do you think that every single thing that you do in your life poisons you by accident? Do you think that there's some kind of excuse that stupidity and greed overarchingly makes sense? No, it doesn't. The only thing that makes sense is psychopathy, okay? If you are a psychopath, this makes total sense. Because you hate people, you hate life, you hate freedom, you hate liberty, you hate everything. You have no love, you have no joy, you have no emotions, you have no empathy. Only that kind of mindset could produce a world like the one that we're living in now. And if you want to change it, you have to be the change you want to see. You have to provide the example for others to follow. You have to free yourself first. And other people will see you doing what you're doing, and they will free themselves too. They have such a thirst for blood and tyranny that only a thirst for liberty and freedom can extinguish it. And I feel that as power, responsibility, moral code, those things are actually incredibly difficult. The high road is always the harder road, is it not? It is very easy to succumb to scumbaggery. It is not that hard to sell out. It is very hard to maintain to your principles. It is very hard to do the right thing. I had a friend of mine, when my internet was cut off for a week kind of thing, I had to broadcast from my friend's place. And they don't really have any money, okay? But they had some equipment, so I was capable of jacking my computer in, and they had a spare room and that sort of thing. So I was doing in there. And I managed to come across a little bit of part-time work, and so I gave them a bit of money. Even though I really don't have any myself, I understand that they're in a worse position than me, and they did something good for me, and so I did something good back for them. That was very hard for me to do, but I knew that I should do it, and therefore I did do it, okay? And that is what being a good person is all about, doing the right thing, even though it's the hard thing to do. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back after the break. Whose side are you
on? Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the breed of uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle East is a modern day attack on the native land. Project eugenics planned on the common man. Expand the military industrial complex. Annex or install you with chemical objects. Vex the psyop attacking your conscience. Next, your brain agrees with the offense. Political correctness. People are afraid to speak what they feel instead of what
Welcome
they
back. See black ladies and gentlemen. Now a lot of lands are betrayed. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about keeping it bankster. Oh yeah. You do have to make some effort sometimes to keep it bankster, I must admit. The call-in number, and the Greek, if you're listening in still, call back, bro. Sorry I didn't get to your call in the last segment. I was kind of on a bit of a on a bit of a download rant, you know, as I do. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Really do want to hear from you, ladies and gentlemen. Now, there's a bit of news here about Occupy Auckland. Penny Bright is a media spokesperson for the Water Pressure Group. Had her on the show a number of times. And let me see. This is one of her press releases. Is it because Occupy Auckland are the only ones trying to ensure Acts One Law for All applies to ACT MP for Epsom, John Banks, that some of us are facing jail? Okay, now, first of all, I just need to explain the context of this. The local council, due to the occupiers breaking a bylaw, which is like camping in public grounds and stuff like that, they say, well, they're breaking a bylaw, ergo they have to go to jail. Okay, so obviously if you've got a tent pitched, you're obviously some kind of dangerous, scary criminal and need to be put in jail for the good of humanity at the cost to taxpayers of $110,000 a month. because they were hurting the grass. Isn't that great? You know, what's more important to you, grass or democracy? And we're not talking about all the grass in all the world and you have to choose between them. We're talking about just a little bit of grass in one particular place in the middle of a city. All right. Or democracy. What do you want? Where's your fracking priorities, council? Scumbags. Unbelievable. Well, actually, it's totally believable because they're the council. They're scumbags. The Greek has called back in. Thank you very much, mate. Welcome.
Indeed they are. Indeed they are. Yes, thank you again for having me, Vinny. It's a war of perception. I've been looking at this for a long time, as you have, and it's all about perception. You know, we call it the corporate the truth movement. But when the information is given, it becomes a war of perception. And I'm not speaking in mysteries here. What I'm saying is it seems like it hasn't honed in, it hasn't been honed in, or it hasn't really hit the majority of the people. No matter how much information is put out there, it's always kept in within the realm of perception. And let me give an example, may I? The way the people are controlled, obviously, is by communications, right? The media and let's say the school is a form of communication, you know, the alleged schools, because it has to be on television before they can teach it in school, right? And then you have the imagery, and you had a wonderful lady on the other day that worked with Freeman that you spoke about the imagery and the language and all this, and it's just a perception. In other words, there's nothing there. So in other words, the society is almost driven into a mode of suicide. The people are actually going for the bait. You know, the pleasant images on the Monsanto products and the pleasant ads. And, you know, I mean, deep down people know that voting doesn't change anything or do anything, but they do it anyway because of a perception.
If voting did change anything, they'd make it illegal.
Exactly. And it's also, you know, the voters just vote. The electors are the ones that do the electing. So it's all about language and imagery, language and imagery. And you've had a stellar cast of guests on your show discussing all of this. But it's about language, communications, and imagery. And it's basically a battle that invites, and they're really not doing anything. And even the most brutal dictator on the planet, his police force is actually taken from the people themselves.
I find that what happens with humanity is that people get this sort of impetus to do something only when a threat is realized. Like basically the New World Order system, for example, people haven't been aware of it. But once they are aware of it, they either close themselves off from the world, start becoming paranoid, start being afraid, start calling other people sheeple, and start to actually almost adopt the characteristics of the enemy. Or they do the direct opposite and they adopt all those characteristics of those who are good, moralistic, caring, loving, etc. And they go to war, basically, for a just cause. Now, I'm not sure what your position is on war in itself. And there's this term called a righteous war. Have you heard of this? Like you have God on your side or whatever. You have moral authority, moral justification. And I feel that that's a very dangerous stepping stone, Greek, because what happens is once you think that you've got the moral justification, once you've got the moral high ground, you then start to believe that anybody who challenges you is a baby killer and a crazy person. I mean, like climate change people are absolutely indicative of this. Anybody who doesn't believe in climate change and isn't working hard out to do it is the one who kills all the babies and pollutes the side of the road just for the heck of it and anything. Well, the only thing you've really got a problem with is the fact that they want to kill you.
Well, ultimately, okay, the war, okay, the war aspect, yes. When you're talking about the situation on this planet in recorded history, it seems to be a necessary evil, even though it's not. But the ultimate form of war, of course, is Sun Tzu, to win without fighting. So there's another level to it. In other words, if you do see a war, it's basically squandering, it's basically, other than a corporate takeover, it's squandering the resources of one country to get the resources of another. None of it makes sense, and as the banksters say, they make more money in one day of war than in a year of peacetime, so, you know, well, can we point the finger at the banksters for all the ills of society? No, but can we point the finger at the banksters for the majority of the ills of society? I'd say most people that know would say yes.
Well, and there's some statistics to back you up there. Halliburton, in 1 year of war, made $50 billion, okay? Microsoft bought, what was it, Skype or something like that, or Yahoo for like several billion dollars, like a couple, like two, three, four, 5 billion, you know, tops, okay? So there's the difference between somebody who makes money off of war versus somebody who makes money off of technology and peacetime sort of stuff. War is incredibly profitable, but the only reason why it's so profitable is because all of the wealth winds up being stolen. Okay, it's the same reason why the Roman Empire was able to advance so quickly and spread out all over the place. It's because they weren't creating their own wealth. They were stealing the wealth that everybody had built up over many, many generations and absorbing it, taking it, using it to advance their own ends. And that's precisely the same card that's being played all the time. Whenever we go to war, whenever we do something, we feel that we have the justification. Just because somebody else is a thief, it means I can steal off them. It's like, no. Two wrongs don't make a right. An eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
Yeah, well, the root, I believe, again, like you mentioned earlier, the long part of the history of it, it's all these gods. It's all these gods doing war, right? And right now it's man doing war, but, you know, there'll come a day when the gods actually will be doing war, and that will be a sight to behold, but that's for another call, I guess. But it's all these different gods, right? You see what I mean? Like, both sides feel like they have God on their side, so it can't be the same one mathematically, can it?
Well, that's assuming both of them believe that there's one God and they're both fighting for their one God against each other, who thinks they're supporting the one God and not the other, because if there is only
correct
one. yeah, I see what
right
you mean. And I say, why not talk about right now? Why save it to another call? Why don't we talk about the wars of the gods?
Oh, the wars of the gods? Well, they do exist, and, you know, call them what you will through the years. Now they're calling them UFOs and ETs, and through the history, you see, even within Christianity, you've got at least a dozen different gods within Christianity, you know, the different sects and the different denominations. You know, like they have a Jesus Christ character in one denomination that says if you don't believe in him, you burn in hell eternally. And there's another Jesus Christ that says, well, if you believe in me, all your sins are forgiven. You can do whatever you want. You see the point? That's not the same one. So there's actual, what came first, the chicken or the egg? What came first, the God or the belief? So usually all myths, stories, religions, and science come from an actual substance first, whether it's visible or not. So, well, like I said, there is going to come a time when all of these entities are going to have it out, and that's going to be a sight to behold. And it has happened in the past. It hasn't happened when someone like Vinnie Eastwood could run down the street with their brand new video recorder and catch it on film, let's say.
So, like, way back in ancient times kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. And it happens cyclically, yeah.
Well, see, I was talking with somebody about this the other day, Greg, and they talked about, I think it was something like 13,000 years or something. We run on a 13,000-year cycle, and allegedly the Great Flood of Noah, when they trace it back and do all the times, I don't know how these people work this stuff out, but apparently that was 13,000 years ago. A big crack came around the planet, basically caved it in. All the underwater aquifers and volcanoes, which are like 70% of the volcanic material that comes out is water-based anyway. And so there's a whole bunch of water that wasn't around anymore. The massive tidal waves, the size of the Empire State Building. There's watermarks on the pyramids of Giza, that kind of stuff, right? Massive, yeah. Huge fracking disaster. Pardon the pun.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about nowadays is comparison to back then, and some people freak out about it, right? Like, for example, Bible says allegedly that there was an industrial revolution 300 years before the time of Noah. How many years ago did we just have an industrial revolution, Greg? About 300 years ago. Isn't that interesting? So some people are saying that nowadays, like, we are living in the end times. Do you believe that? I'm still of two minds about it.
Well, that's such a topic I have a lot of detail on, and I can teach or some people say preach on it, which is ridiculous, with great specifics. But you need to know, because you can't, it sounds religious, but it is an epic. We're going through the New Age, which is basically the scenery on the highway with the Earth, basically being a semi-lost planet, a semi-lost solar system going through galactic aspect. And, yes, it's not the end, though. It's the beginning. And I've been looking at this very, very carefully, we really only have 6,000 years of history to base it on forensically and in any other way. I mean, there are bits of information that lead to disasters and things before that, but I've only focused on the past 6,000 years. We are clearly in a time of change right now. But like I said, it's a battle of the gods that's coming, and a modern man is so disconnected. In the words of Aleister Crowley, he says, well, they're angels, they're demons. In the future, you'll call them something else, extraterrestrials or aliens. But they're all the same thing. Not that I'm a fan of Aleister Crowley, but even the people that were on the fringe of society, let's say, considered to be intellectual, knew this and know this. Just because you can't see it, touch it, feel it, or smell it, you can't say it doesn't exist. But on the other hand, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it, right? And there are measurable ways to see this, we are. It's coming. Let me get out a little bit of a limb and stretch a little bit. And you know, it's risque. You got about two decades. As things go on the way they are going to be going on. I mean, what you see going on in the world today is pretty much how it's going to be for the next couple of decades. I shouldn't say couple of decades. I should say within the next 7 or 10 years, you're going to have a big axial shift in the way of thinking. The last major axial shift was 9/11. You know, they call it like a post 9/11 world now, right? You're going to have another major axial shift like that within 7 or 10 years. It's going to shift everyone's attention to the Middle East, and it's no big surprise. It's going to be very gradual. But if you know it's going to come before it does, it is quite astounding. But it happens very quickly to most. And then you're going to have, of course, the major geological and astronomical events that are going to be happening, which are going to be quite fantastic and spectacular, to say the least.
Well, I think that's a nice positive and ridiculously scary thing to leave it on, Greg. Thank you very much for your call. Ladies and gentlemen, you can call in too. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Call in over the break and we'll take your call when we come back. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ladies and gentlemen, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, you can listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show for free online right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. You can also listen in the chat room, send me messages and stuff like that. Sometimes I'm a bit slack with the chat room, but today we have quite a few people in there, which is quite interesting. So the VinnieEastwoodShow.com is Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. And on the top left-hand side, just underneath the home button, there is the chat room right there for you. And sometimes, and I find this is good with truthers, and more specifically people who listen to this show, generally quite friendly and happy and decent people, and often actually just keep on chatting well after the show is finished, you know. Come to the Vinnie Eastwood Show chat room, make a new friend, you know, that kind of thing. And I really appreciate all you guys in there at the moment. Just love you lots. Now, Russell Norman, Green MP, has just updated his Facebook status. Get this, okay. John Key, I'll just set the stage for you. Last year during the election campaign, John Key got an hour on Radio Live. He hosted the hour during an election campaign, and he said, "I'm not going to talk about politics because it's against electoral law." Are you fracking kidding me? The mere fact that the scumbag exists and is talking and is the prime minister up for election makes it political, whichever way you slice it. This is Russell Norman's status. If John Key's 1 hour on Radio Live is found to be an electoral advert, then it means that National has, in brackets once again, breached the allocation for spending on election broadcast ads. And once again, it was Stephen Joyce, as campaign manager, who oversaw the breach, in brackets, last time he said he didn't realise that the allocation was GST inclusive. Stephen Joyce was also former managing director at Radio Live, where John Key wound up getting his hour on radio. Isn't that a fracking coincidence? His campaign manager organises John Key to have an hour on radio at his old work. That's not a conflict of interest or using one's connections, is it? He was also the Minister of Communications who gave a $43 million loan to Radio Live's owners, MediaWorks. Is anybody fracking home? These people are scum. They're liars, manipulators, cheats, autocrats, authoritarians. There are a myriad of names that you can call these people, none of which would be entirely accurate in and of themselves. You'd probably need to fill up several pages just of insults, you know, double-spaced, in order to make sure that these people are accurately described. The sheer scumbaggery is something that makes the mind reel. I feel that this is, unfortunately, the common practice of politicians and politics in general, which is why most people don't want to participate in it anymore. You know, they've realised that it's a scam, that it doesn't matter how they vote. And so they choose not to vote, thereby giving consent to the system that screws them over because they don't vote, as opposed to a system that will screw them over because they vote anyway, right? That's the choice you have. You either get screwed over by the people you vote for or get screwed over by the people you refuse to vote for. Okay? That's politics, as far as I'm concerned. And the media are supposed to be keeping an eye on these trash. They are supposed to be keeping an eye on them, not giving them an hour of free airtime. See, now, politics may be bad enough. Media is just as bad, if not worse, okay? Because the people who work there are idiots. Idiots. Morons. I can say this with authority because somebody who is one of the biggest mainstream media journalists in this country, Mr. Ian Wishart, told me so. Because he worked in that industry for quite some time before he woke up to the truth and became a conspiracy theorist, and now is one of the most demonized media entities in this country, of course. And he said that they're just airheads. Okay, and I cannot for the life of me remember a time when I have talked to any current media personality, and I've talked to quite a few, that has actually impressed me with their intellect. Not one, ever. If anything, they have only solidified my opinion of them. This is the world we live in. Politicians are corrupt. The elections are a sham. The media are morons. And all the information they give you to make a decision on has been corrupted too. So what's the solution to all of this? Sure, you know the problems, but where are the solutions? G. Edward Griffin has come up with a great concept. Freedom Force International. This is the thing. If you can't get what you want out of City Hall, then become City Hall. They will train you in how to speak, how to look, how to dress, how to do all of these documents, do all of this, that, and the other, in order to get you elected to a position of power where you can actually make a good difference in this world, as opposed to what the rest of them do, which is engage in utter scumbaggery. Okay? And I think that's a good way. All right? And same with the media. I'm doing precisely to the media, which I feel everybody should be doing, everybody who has the capacity to, at least, is to not complain about them per se, just replace them because they are no longer relevant. There have been many, many instances in the US election at this point where Ron Paul has been simply cut out of the coverage. Okay, in fact, there was some off the record conversations that have been had by radio show hosts in the United States saying that from people that are right, mainstream journalists in the newsroom, hearing the people go, kill that Ron Paul story, kill it, right? And you look in New Zealand, guess how much coverage of Ron Paul we have? We talk about the American election here. Oh, yes, indeedy, we do. And guess how much Ron Paul coverage there is? Zippo. That's right. Even though they committed fraud in the Iowa election, that's been proven and admitted. Fraud in the Nevada election, proven and admitted. Okay? Not one mention of Ron Paul. And that is not an accident. If you're a slave master, the most dangerous thing for your slaves to have is hope. You need to ensure that they are not exposed to anything that would give them such a thing. Take it out of the airwaves, off the television screens, so that the potential for inspiration and resistance is greatly reduced. That is the goal and agenda of the mainstream media, to only show you things that will demotivate you, things that will destroy your hope, things that will take away your faith in humanity. I feel that this is one of the worst parts of our society, is that some people take a responsibility to take away other people's joy. other people's lives, other people's economic security. There is only one justification for that, and again, as I said, as I mentioned earlier, it's psychopathy. So, knowing, accept what you know. The media, politicians, and the businesses are run by psychopaths. Okay? It's just that simple. How's a psychopathic mindset work? Well, they hate everything about you, and they'll do everything they can to kill you, while at the same time getting you to love it and pay for it, and in order to convince you to do it, they will tell you a sob story and use your empathy, which they don't have, against you. They will manipulate you. And they are doing it as we speak. Even if you know you're being lied to, you're still getting manipulated just by watching it. I don't watch the news. I monitor enemy communications now. And sometimes, and this has been happening a lot more recently, I cannot, for the life of me, continue to watch the news. I sit there, and after murder, rape, people missing, disasters in some country they never heard of, can't locate it on a map, I just lose interest. Okay, and I think maybe that's the idea. Maybe the idea is to stop people having an interest in the real truth and lives of others. Is that what we want for our human race? There's only one race. It ain't black, it ain't Asian, it ain't Caucasian. It's the human race. And that's about it. We're all brothers and sisters, etc. And I love you all like family. But what do I do with my family if they start ticking me off? I will certainly fight against them. I will certainly pull them up on their Shiite Muslim. And I will certainly not lie back and hold my tongue while they're trying to hatch scams and schemes against me, provided I'm actually aware of it while it is being committed. A family is supposed to be a fair society, or a representation of which, with a nuclear ideology and what have you. Okay, so basically, if you treat everything like it's a very small unit, a small, tight-knit family, things solve themselves much easier, because it's so hard to keep things from your family. And by goodness, secrets eat you from the inside out. And there is an abundance of secrecy in our society today. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.